Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are listening to KGBM Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgbm.org. I'm Roxana, and this is Desert Oracle Radio Replay. Today, I was shoveling our deck. More than 6 inches of snow had piled up there this week. And I tuned in to kgbm.org, and weekly scores by Susanna came on at 10, and I was shoveling more than an hour, so I got to hear the whole thing. Susanna played the Loki soundtrack, which was just what I needed to hear, I think. Loki the Trickster. Thinking about that story gave me hope, despite the news this week. I guess you're either celebrating or coping or maybe evaluating who your opponent is. I feel quiet and introspective. Well, our first Desert Oracle Radio episode today was produced by Ken Lane, November 12th, 2021, and it pays tribute to a trickster. Here is Huey Huey Coyotl and the Canine Gods.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. Getting dark real early now. Like the daytime never had a chance. Welcome to Desert Oracle Radio, which broadcasts from Joshua Tree, just like the robot lady said. But what does anybody even mean when they say that? In the autumn of our solar year 2021, if you live over in 29 Palms, Joshua Tree is both the name of the national park that has its headquarters in 29 and the unincorporated rectangle of desert one over before Yucca Valley, with the national park boundary on the south end and the marine base to the north. And it's the name of a yucca tree that does not grow in 29 Palms, really, because it's outside the higher altitude and slightly cooler and wetter Joshua Tree zone. You know it when you see it, when you're in the zone. Because in the zone there are Joshua trees. Beyond the zone, they are only there through accident or oddity. And never in numbers. They also don't appreciate fire. If you have a connection to the outside world, you might say Joshua Tree to mean the Morongo Basin, that stretch of desert between Wonder Valley at the east end and Morongo Valley on the southwestern end. Some people who say Joshua Tree when they're talking about Johnson Valley. It takes all kinds. speaking of Johnson Valley, there's a spot or two going up that road where the Joshua trees rapidly fade into the rear view, but you still see an occasional old beast still hanging on. Nothing but creosote and shotgun shells around it. You get those islands here and there, like coming out of Cedar City into St. George. Just for an exit or two, and that's it. It's the same coming up on Olancha on the 395 or headed south on Highway 93 just before Wickenburg. If you see some Joshua trees growing wherever you happen to be, that's an indication that you happen to be in the Mojave Desert. It's an indicator species. Because the Mojave isn't just some little spot behind about 5,000 vacation rentals around Joshua Tree, or probably Landers. It's a healthy chunk of the state of California. Along with northwestern Arizona, southern Nevada, and a sliver of Utah that goes right into Zion National Park. Tonight, let's speak some facts. Put down some information. A lot of times when you're told someone will be speaking facts, it means they're about to tell you a lot of opinions, which they might also call truth, as in, that's my truth. Not a wonderful habit, rhetorically speaking, in this case speaking of rhetoric. But if I tell you there will be factual information presented, which I rarely do, even though the historical and cultural and occult and ecological tales you hear on this program are believed to be true by leading experts, including the host of this program, well, you won't be publicly humiliated if you're taking a nice peaceful hike with 700 or 800 strangers and repeat something you've heard here about wildlife or cactus or whatever. Because everybody will be talking so loud on their nature hike with 700 or 800 other people, all in their hiking costumes, that nobody will notice whatever you say. This is Desert Oracle Radio. I'm your host, Ken Lane. Now it's time for an allegedly regular feature we do around here called Strange and Unusual Facts. An adult coyote chasing prey can run 70 kilometers per hour. And that's probably pretty fast. There are 19 subspecies of coyote, and eastern coyotes have a lot more wolf in them than our southwestern coyotes. Coyotes are monogamous, which means they aren't whoring around all the time like people. And they're monogamous even though there's no threat of them losing their home or their health insurance or whatever if they stray. It's just their nature. And yet, coyotes will mate with domestic dogs or wolves. Whether they're monogamous with domestic dogs or wolves, or maybe the biological social research is a little bit lacking, we just don't know. They will eat anything at a pinch, but rodents are their daily bread, so to speak. Although they'll eat bread, too, or hamburgers, or cat food, or especially the pea pod-shaped pods of the mesquite tree. Common in their southwestern range, and which can provide most of their nutritional needs when the lean times come. And in the desert, the lean times come fairly often. Less rain than usual or no real winter snow in the higher elevations. Well, that equals a much smaller crop of rat babies. Pack rats, wood rats, kangaroo rats, whatever the rodent, there are less of them when there's less precipitation. Less precipitation means less wildflowers, less plant growth, less seeds. Speaking of seeds, the kangaroo rat and its cousin, the kangaroo mouse, can go a lifetime without a drink of water. They get their water from the seeds. Imagine if you were thirsty after a long hike with 700 or 800 strangers. And somebody had filled your canteen with sunflower seeds. Coyotes are especially good at hunting rodents because they are grade A champion pouncers. The way a coyote can pounce, well, it can make a common house cat livid with shame and resentment. Because coyotes can make horizontal leaps of 12 or 13 feet or 4 meters. That's 4 times their entire body length. Despite all this, you'll find some old people who just hate coyotes because old people know death is coming, and the coyotes will never sing for them. But our wild canine is really not a bother to anyone. Why not let them be? Enjoy their songs, enjoy the wonderful job they do controlling the rat populations. Enjoy getting to see a real wild canine that has figured out how to thrive in a world we've made mostly for ourselves and our cars. The Latin species name of the coyote is Canis latrans. I've heard rangers say it Canis latrans. Canis latrans. Who speaks Latin? Does anyone speak Latin around here? Canis latrans? I bet that's what my priest would say if I had a priest who spoke Latin. Canis for dog, latrans for barker, barking. Of course, coyotes do a lot more than bark. They have the most beautiful voices of the night, full of emotion and life. They yip and they howl, they moan and they yowl. And you know when they're all in a full chorus, like a midnight choir of winos around the fire can, well, that's the most beautiful thing you can hear. Is that a subjective fact? I don't know. We'll have to run it by the research department. Speaking of Canis latrans, don't feel bad if you don't know how to pronounce it. I've heard a dozen different wildlife biologists say it a dozen different ways, all with whatever regional accent and dialect they bring to the job. The important thing about the coyote's name is that the ancient Mexican name for the wonderful creature is just what you already call it. Coyotl. Coyote. Or coyote, the southwestern dialect version. The word comes to us from ancient Aztec through Mexican Spanish. He is the trickster in the form of the cunning wild dog of the hills. American biologists slapped a Latin name on coyote in the 1800s. Some of the other names European Americans tried to stick on our beloved coyote include prairie wolf and American jackal. Lewis and Clark tried burrowing dog in their diaries of their western voyages, but that sounded dumb as hell. Besides, the French and Indian fur traders already had a burrowing dog in their vocabulary, the prairie dog. Eventually, the new populations of European Americans in the West came to know our small wolf by its ancient Udo-Aztecan name. And here's something to remember next time you read about your tax dollars being spent to massacre coyotes by the thousands while you can't get dental insurance. Coyote is a compact-sized wolf, brilliant and adaptable, but it's also God. Looking for God in the world? Watch the coyote. Wee Wee Coyote, that's its holy name. Old, old coyote. Lord of the arts, God of music and dance. Our guide through adolescence and onward to adulthood. King of the prank, patron of uninhibited sexuality. Nobody loves a party more or throws better ones. When he's not making a mockery of the other gods and their powers, or engaged in the most absurd games of love and betrayal, he's playing with the humans, his favorite creatures. Sometimes it's harmless fun, and sometimes he once again tricks the people into another fruitless war against themselves because he's bored. We've all been there. The divine trickster. The keeper of esoteric knowledge. Therefore, his libertine people, whenever they get in a fix, which they always do, just like Coyote does. Wise and practical, to the point, and an outrageous liar. Lord of earthly beauty and magic. He is the patron of artisans and artists, musicians and whores, storytellers and the weavers of fine embroidery. He likes nice things and he needs to be entertained. And he's always on the prowl. But don't get too caught up in the he part either, because like all tricksters and magicians, Wee Wee Coyote is gender fluid. Any port in a storm or at a party, and why not? Why not acknowledge the gods who are truly reflective of our nature and contradictions? Our promiscuity and creativity. Our low threshold for boredom. Have you noticed an interesting reptile while you're walking around in the desert? The desert horned lizard is commonly called the horny toad because it looks more like a toad with its flat body, about 4 inches. And also, that's a funnier name. In the wild, which is the only place a horned lizard belongs, the desert horned lizard can live up to 8 years. All on a diet of mostly harvester ants. Which is why you'll sometimes notice a horned lizard hanging around the side of the trail, where the ants are walking right by in a line. It's like DoorDash. But if you've ever looked closely at a horned lizard and wondered what's going on with all those thorn-like spikes and horns around the head and neck, do yourself a favor and look up a picture of a horned lizard skull. All those frightening-looking horns are part of the skull, part of the bone, which makes it probably the most death metal skull of all desert creatures. Listen, I have to tell you about something. The first, and perhaps the only, Desert Oracle radio tour is on its way to your southwestern town. Going all the way to the Mississippi River and back again. How about that? Come on out for a night of strange desert tales, including yours if you volunteer to use our haunted telephone to call in. We record these live radio shows for use on this very program, as is only natural. Tickets are on sale now. I swear I'll shut up about it when it's over. This tour coincides with the publication of the paperback edition of Desert Oracle Volume 1, out on December 7 from Picador Books. November 26th at Bridges, that's a strange old church in San Diego. The 27th in Tucson, Hotel Congress, Club Congress. December 2 at the Stateside Theater in Austin. On the 4th at the Texas Theater in Dallas, you know, where they arrested one or more versions of Lee Harvey Oswald. Sunday the 5th at Paper Tiger, San Antonio. December 7th at the Galveston Artist Residency, a free performance. On Wednesday, December 8th at Gasa Gasa in my dear old hometown of New Orleans. December 11th at Growlers in Memphis. Yes, that's Elvis Presley's former karate dojo. Sunday the 12th at Opolis in Norman, Oklahoma. Homeland of my maternal grandfather. I'm gonna go look for where he was born. Tuesday the 14th at the Jean Cocteau Cinema in Santa Fe. That's the theater beautifully restored by the author George R.R. Martin. The 15th in Mesa, Arizona at the lovely Nesbitt Elliott Playhouse. And wrapping it up on Friday, December 17th at the Philosophical Research Society Library in Los Angeles, California. Go to desertoracle.com and click events for all the dates and venues and ticket links. From Amboy to Zizix and across the Great Mojave Wilderness, this is Desert Oracle Radio, broadcasting from Joshua Tree. Maybe you're listening in or around JT tonight on our hometown station, KCDZ 107.7 FM. Or maybe you're listening on KZMU in Moab Castle Valley on Saturday nights, or Valley 104.9 up in Twin Peaks Land, Sunday evenings, or Radio Free Lexington in Kentucky, or Black Sheep Radio up in Vermont, or Lookout FM in Burbank and Hollywood. Wherever you're listening, I bet there's a coyote not too far away from you right now. It had been too long since I'd taken a long early evening hike in my favorite county nature preserve in the area. And I was out there a couple of nights ago and was completely surrounded by the coyotes singing to each other. That's the best seat in the house. We'll be back next week with more Desert Oracle Radio. Thank you for joining us tonight. And thanks to our friend Red Blue Black Silver for the haunting soundscapes you heard on this program. Watch out for the coyotes. And good night from the Voice of the Desert.
It's the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay on KGBM Bozeman Community Radio at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgbm.org. Our next half hour is an episode of Desert Oracle Radio from November 19th, 2021. Ken Lane is doing some deep thinking about life and death and social norms, and someone wrote a book. So listen up. It's Run for the Desert Hills.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. And that's where I am. The haunted desert. But haunted by what? Exactly. Haunted by everything, really. Everything that ever happened, that ever left its mark upon the landscape, physically or psychically. And a lot of what occurred was what most people would consider pretty rough, pretty bad. But it's in the past, our past anyway, so we are drawn to these places. We stop the car at a roadside cemetery and hop out to stroll around the tombstones and take pictures. Especially if it's a graveyard where we don't know anybody. I take the most pictures in the cemeteries where I know a lot of the names. At least the names, sometimes the people themselves, in memory now. When I'm in a place where my ancestors are in the ground, I take pictures. And spend some time at the gravesites. Some people find it gloomy, but communing with one's ancestors is probably the oldest form of contemplation. And contemplation is the key to understanding your own mind, your own psyche. Meditation has become popular because it promises to get you away from yourself, to get out of your own head. The other end of that is self-obsession, which can be both popular and profitable, at least if you look good on TikTok. Or maybe you could have one of those Substack newsletters with a couple of thousand paying customers. Imagine wanting to pay for email. I'd pay to stop it all. There's a sculpture garden not far from where I live, and I like to walk around there and contemplate. Now and then. Day or night, it has its different moods. The statues are imposing and sort of hideous. But the medium is concrete and rebar, so in that context, the statues are beautiful. The same charmless lengths of rolled steel and the same slop of wet concrete that makes the footings of a tract house or a fast food drive-through. Instead formed into an enormous Jesus Christ, standing between the Joshua trees. Here I'm talking about Desert Christ Park in Yucca Valley, but it could be anywhere, any place near where you live, where contemplation was the intent of the place. The goal of the maker. Cemeteries are good for this pursuit because they tend to be quiet. Even when they're surrounded by the noise and muscle of our civilization. After the comic actor John Belushi died, his friend and collaborator Dan Aykroyd made a tradition of visiting Belushi's grave with appropriate food and drink. Why I remember such things, I don't know. But I recall that Aykroyd would ride his motorcycle out to the cemetery, equipped with a box of good fried chicken and a six-pack, to spend the afternoon communing with his departed comrade. People have been doing that kind of thing for as long as people have been around. Other animals mourn their dead too. Elephants, wolves and coyotes, magpies and ravens, otters and sea lions. And of course, our closest relatives, the other primates. Humans are probably the only species that makes an effort to visit the places where strangers died. Battlefields especially, but the sites of our modern tragedies too. The World Trade Center site, the memorial to the Great Fire of London back in 1666. The cities in Japan where America dropped the bomb just to make sure everybody on Earth knew we had it and knew we'd use it on civilians. In the desert, we visit ghost towns, whether cliff dwellings of the pre-Columbian era or abandoned mining settlements of barely a century ago. We visit the homes of the long departed, like Mary Hunter Austin's house in Independence, California, which she designed. Artists can't help it. They make their art and they make their world. They don't have a choice. None of us has a choice, really. We do not choose the place of our birth or whether we're born at all. We do not choose our parents, our religion or lack thereof, our economic status, our genetic predispositions. We don't choose what we look like to ourselves or to others. Can't choose our native tongue, and we sure are not asked for approval of our ancestors' behavior, good or bad, or like everybody, somewhere in the middle. We are here in our time, and the only real choice we've got is what to do with the time we have. Because you don't have to do anything. Sure, the society around you will respond unless you make for the wilderness and manage to keep hidden, like the Desert Fathers did in the wastelands of Egypt some 1700 years ago. Just carve a little space in the soft limestone and make yourself a little rat hole and be one with whatever you think God is. The Desert Fathers became the first social media stars in their way. Of course, other people did the publicity, and most of these early Christian hermits wanted no part of anything worldly. But others, being human, grew to enjoy the attention and the gifts. Like the Thanksgiving traffic at the west entrance to Joshua Tree National Park, what started as a few widely spaced desert rats and their rat holes became a mob scene. The desert has become a city. That's how Athanasius of Alexandria described the thousands of monks and nuns who moved to the desert in emulation of Saint Anthony or Anthony the Great. Great at turning the desert wilderness into civilization, anyway. If unintentionally. Throughout our history, people have said, I've had enough. I've enjoyed as much of this as I can stand. To quote the Porter Wagoner song, which was written by Whispering Bill Anderson, I should note. And off the people run to the hills, back to the land, chasing freedom or something close. 30 years ago, the high school and college kids of Czechoslovakia, the ones in Prague mostly, although there were demonstrations in many towns and cities, managed to overturn the Soviet-controlled government in a few short weeks. Peacefully, too. But simultaneously, ethnic and religious wars were breaking out between people who had peacefully coexisted for generations just a couple of countries away in southern Europe. When I headed that way 3 decades ago, first to the temporary autonomous zone of Free Prague, later to the Balkans, it was not to study the political systems and the stress fractures of modern society, although that's part of the work a writer should be doing. It was for the TAZ, the TAZ, the Temporary Autonomous Zone, that sprang up in the vacuum of power. The collapse of an old system, an old bureaucracy, and its old rules that young people in particular had all stopped following overnight. That's where it's good, for a little while, for as long as it lasts. And it never lasts because by our nature we organize things. 26,000 years ago in what is now the Czech Republic, early humans buried their dead, swapped the heads of gazelles with those of people, and left behind hundreds of little clay figures that were ritually burned by a sorcerer at the place the archaeologists call the Magician's Hut. Dolní Vestonice, Moravia, where the huts were built from the bones of the mammoth. There are artifacts with hash marks, too, carefully applied. Maybe marking the cycles of the moon, although we can't really say from this distance in time. Even then, especially then, there were outcasts. There were people who looked different, acted weird, who were maybe pushed out. Or, in the case of Dolní Vesonice, buried with honors, but we can never expect that, should never expect it, demand it, sure, but be ready when the society says no. Because it will, most of the time. So it goes. All animals are born to the same world we are. A world they did not make. Like the beaver, we can change parts of our environment. Like the birds, we can move to other lands, or at least try. Reach for the sky, as some workplace poster might say. But realize you might get more done if you reach for a rock. Make a fire ring. Build a foundation for your magician's hut. Carve a little face on it. Or throw it at somebody's head. The people around you will decide how the action is perceived. unless you've left the people behind. Then it's just you and your little rat hole in a limestone wall. For now. Welcome back to Desert Oracle Radio. I'm your host, Ken Lane, and we have on the line the author Kendra Attlee Work, who wrote a book that I've been reading this year called Miracle Country, and it's in large part about one of all of our favorite places in the Southwest, which is the Eastern Sierra, or the Owens Valley, or the East Side, or whatever you like to call it. Kendra, welcome to Desert Oracle Radio.
Thanks for having me.
So your book ended up with me because somebody that I've wandered around with a lot over the years picked it up, I think, in Bishop, and you must have been signing because it's signed.
Yeah, well, Spellbinder, the bookstore in Bishop, they like to keep signed copies on hand, and I live in Bishop and I'm in there all the time, so that's probably where they got it.
That's also one of my favorite bookstores. Tell us a little bit about your book and how you ended up writing about where you're from.
So I grew up here in the Eastern Sierra Nevada. I was born and raised, and my parents had both moved here as young adults and met here. My dad spent his early years in Owens Valley living in the burned out shell of a restaurant out in the middle of the desert that he was able to squat in rent free. And my mom was a school teacher who at one point, she was a little bit farther north in the valley where they get some more snow. And at one point she was in Levining, and she cross country skied 18 miles over avalanche debris to feed the class hamsters. So they were that kind of people, and they were both drawn out here by the landscape, and they met and they raised us out here, and my dad became a hot air balloon pilot, among other things, and just sort of figured out how to make a living out here, and really raised my siblings and I to love this area and love the desert. But then when I was 16, my mom died, and suddenly I had to get out of this place. I had to leave, and I left for 10 years. And being gone for 10 years and being in really different landscapes, like the Southern California for a while and then the green, rainy Midwest, really gave me, first of all, I was dying of homesickness. And it also gave me a really interesting perspective on the desert. While I was gone, I started researching the place that I'd left behind, kind of California and the desert of the West at large, and specifically the Eastern Sierra, Owens Valley area. And the product of that whole journey is Miracle Country. So it's part memoir and it's part researched book about this region. And it's also sort of following this decision of mine to move home and live here. I'm talking to you from Bishop, and what made me want to come back and live in a place that's kind of challenging to live in climate-wise and economy-wise and sort of on the front lines of climate change. So that's what that book's about. That's what Miracle Country tells the story of.
A lot of people have no idea what you're talking about when you say Eastern Sierra.
Yeah, a lot of people have no idea what you're talking about when you say rain shadow or drip line. So but there was a lot of translating to do when I was back there, which was helpful, actually, to write about the desert while I was very far away from it. And I was really writing, especially during the beginning of the really harsh drought. And my neighborhood, the neighborhood where I grew up, actually burned down while I was in Minnesota. And I flew home on a red-eye flight and sifted ash with the neighbors. And that is actually what opens the book. So, and had to go back to that place full of water and explain to everyone what my community in the West was going through. So that was pretty surreal several years.
And this was a few years before the mega fires that we're having now, that now you see them on the front page of the New York Times or the headline news. And I heard about one of the Sierra fires on the BBC driving around in the, you know, world news. It's also something you live with when you live in a place where forest and desert meet. And
yeah,
that sounds like the area where you grew up.
So we're the high desert. So we're right at the base of right at the eastern base of the Sierra Nevada Mountains. So we're right at the beginning of the Great Basin. So we are kind of in an interesting liminal space where we're pressed up against an alpine environment, but it's extremely dry because most of the precipitation falls on the west side of the Sierra Nevada mountains. So we can see snow on the mountain peaks, but we will often go a year without what feels like a solid rain or any snow ourselves. And then other times we get floods and blizzards. That's just the way it goes, partly because we're so close to mountains. So it's a pretty interesting land of extremes.
Bishop is a place that's fascinated me for a long time because it is in amber. It has never got to explode with growth. And it's because of an interesting historical reason that I thought you gave a wonderful telling of that history mixed in with your story. Can you give a little short version of that?
So if you've seen the film Chinatown, you know a very, very fictionalized version of the story. But since the early 1900s, Los Angeles, 1913 was when the aqueduct was completed. Los Angeles has been importing on average about a third of their water, but it really varies year to year, but a pretty substantial chunk of their water from Owens Valley. And that's an ongoing dynamic. I did a lot of research into that to write the book, because when I first moved away from Owens Valley, I definitely grew up with a sense that something had been taken from this place. There was a sense that something had been removed or stolen in a way, but the details were fuzzy, and it really took a lot of research and a lot of distance and time to clarify to myself what all of that meant and sort of complicating history is something I really enjoy doing in Miracle Country, and sort of taking things beyond villain and victim and sort of looking at chains of predation in the valley, the role of the ranchers as another wave of predators in the valley who then became the victims of Los Angeles, and just sort of complicating that whole story. But the bottom line is that LA and my valley are deeply enmeshed through this water relationship that is ongoing today. Some historians will say, if it weren't for a lot of the land here being put into watershed protection, perhaps this would be a lot bigger town, because you really can't develop that much more than it's already developed. And the result is a lot of housing issues but also wilderness that perhaps would have been developed. So it's very complicated, and it's kind of fun to get into the nitty gritty of all the complicated history there.
Now, on this show, we occasionally talk about esoteric and strange things. And there was one part toward the end of your book that caught my attention because of that. You worked in a haunted house.
I did. I worked in the Whaley House in Old Town San Diego.
And what did you do there? Did you corral the ghost, or?
I wish that I could have corralled some ghosts. I sold tickets essentially to the tours of the house, and I was often in there. It was open pretty late at night, so I was often in there late at night by myself, just hoping to see a ghost, and I didn't. But what I did encounter was sort of a pretty interesting packaged version of California history that was easy to sell to tourists from the Midwest who would wander in really sunburned from their time at the beach and San Diego beaches and want to experience something of the old West. And so that was mostly what I learned about, was the way that history can be the history, which is in actuality very dark and nuanced, can be sort of packaged and sold. And that's sort of a trade that the West has been participating in pretty much for all of recorded history. So that was a pretty interesting facet of my experience working in a haunted house. I wish I could have met some ghosts.
Old Town is a bizarre place. I mean, it was pretty much rebuilt to be a historical destination, wasn't it?
Yes, it's very much, it's got a lot of the old hotels that they've sort of recreated, and it's very much a historical, a version of history, we'll say, amusement park now, essentially.
As an ex-mayor there said once, it's before he was arrested, all the mayors in San Diego get arrested, that Old Town was San Diego history minus the brothels and the bars.
Yes, exactly. It was sort of a cleaned up, and I would say minus the racially motivated murder and the rest of that that is peppered throughout California history.
Minus don't include that. The Mrs. Whaley is a little better, I guess, for the postcards. What is, I don't want you to give away a secret place or anything, but in a place that's not secret, what's your favorite outdoor thing to do in the Owens Valley?
In the Owens Valley,
Well, include the mountain, the whole area, the Eastern Sierra.
If you're visiting here, the place, the go-to spot, if you've never been, is Little Lakes Valley in Rock Creek Canyon, which is about between Mammoth and Bishop. Sort of, you'd turn off from Tom's place, and that is just a breathtaking place. It's, whenever I go hiking up there, I'm just amazed that I live so close to such. It's so different from the desert. There's meadows and there's wildflowers and there's. It looks like Switzerland with these snow-capped peaks, ringing lakes. So check that out, Little Lakes Valley.
Now, your book is out in paperback right now. It's called Miracle Country. And what do you have another book coming?
Someday. It took me 6 years to write this one, so stay tuned.
Kendra Atleywork, thank you so much for joining us. Do you have a website you want to tell us?
I do. You can just go to atleywork.com, A-T-L-E-E-W-O-R-K, atleywork.com, or you can just search Miracle Country, Kendra Atleywork.
Tell us one more thing before we go. What's the most haunted place you know in the Eastern Sierra?
That's a great question. I would say some of the sites where genocide happened, where the U.S. Army basically carried out a systematic genocide of the Paiute Numu here, but they failed because those people still live in this valley and call it their home. There is a number of sites. One that I write about in the book is on part of the dry lake bed of Owens Lake. I would say probably the dry bed of Owens Lake is the most haunted place. It's extremely eerie, and it's actually set up for visitation. There's strange art out there by urban artists that I don't know where they found. And there's, it smells like sulfur and there's brine flies everywhere, but it's set up for tourists to check it out. So if you want to have a very bizarre, surreal experience, drive around and take a look at the exhibits on the dry bed of Owens Lake, which was drained by Los Angeles in the 20s.
From Amboy to Zizek's and across the great Mojave Wilderness, this is Desert Oracle Radio, broadcasting from Joshua Tree. Thanks to our guest, Kendra Atleywork. Thanks to you for listening. Thanks to Red, Blue, Black, Silver for the soundscapes you heard during the program tonight. It's almost Thanksgiving week. This is pre-Thanksgiving weekend, so watch out for the traffic jams everywhere in Joshua Tree and Yucca Valley, Pioneer Town, 29 Palms and beyond. Speaking of traveling, Desert Oracle Radio Live. Our tour starts in San Diego Friday after Thanksgiving, November 26th. Then Tucson and Austin and Dallas and Galveston, San Antonio, New Orleans, Memphis, Norman, Oklahoma, Santa Fe, New Mexico, Phoenix, Mesa, ending in Los Angeles, which is sold out, but the rest aren't, so get your tickets. Thanks for listening. Happy Thanksgiving week. Good night from the Voice of the Desert.
Thanks to Ken Lane and Red, Blue, Black, Silver for sharing their work on Desert Oracle Radio. Thanks to KGVM and to you for supporting this program. And thanks for listening. I want to hear from you, so call and leave me a message or text about anything on your mind. The number is 406-404-6246. You can hear this program live on the air at 95.9 FM Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgvm.org at 7 on Sunday nights and 9 on Monday mornings. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgvm.org website. Well, some call it the Beaver Moon, some call it the freezing moon, and some just call it the full moon. Either way, it's coming up Saturday, November 16th, so enjoy it. I'll be back next week with more desert and mountain lore for you. Till then, stay well and sweet dreams. I'm going to go tend the fire.